Chapter 2. Petra D'Averio knew she'd leapt out of a pan into another boiling pot. Lady Sodworth and her impossible brats had been almost unbearable, but she was accustomed to penance. The real problem was that Lady Sodworth travelled like a snail. Now that Petra had glimpsed Varzi, thought she'd glimpsed Varzi, the pace was unendurable. Once she'd won free of Milan and then of Italy, she'd prayed that even Ludovico wouldn't pursue her across Europe. But Varzi was Ludo's hunting dog, and surely the man she'd seen in the streets of Arbeville had been he. She'd been trying to persuade herself that she was wrong. The man she thought was Varzi had been in the street as Lady Sodworth's carriage had approached the inn. And how could the hunter be ahead? She knew he could, however. If he'd learned that she was with Lady Sodworth, then he knew her route and destination. It would be in keeping for him to ride ahead and station himself in her sight to warn her of defeat. Such a rotund, swarthy, ordinary-looking man to shoot terror through her. But everyone knew that Varzi never gave up a pursuit and would do anything to make the capture. She wished she could see his face when he realized she was no longer in Lady Sodworth's party. But at what price, Petra? Why this man? He's danger on long, elegant legs. He'd been her only chance, however, and she'd seen only a wastrel rake with a ridiculous dog, a man she could manage. Now, she wasn't so sure. His dog rose and demanded attention again, so he picked her up. Stroking the fluffy white thing, he should look weak, but though he was relaxed as a cat, she sensed danger, and almost felt the carriage was too small, too short of air. Don't be idiotic. Just because the man assumed that a smile and soothing words would get her into his bed didn't constitute danger. She, above all, could resist seduction. He was simply her means to an end, to safe arrival in England. So she assessed him with that in mind. He'd claimed to be wealthy, but he didn't look it. His brown frock coat was loosely cut, as were his buckskin breeches. He wore well-used riding boots, a beige waistcoat that hung, unfastened, over an unruffled shirt that lay open at the neck. No form of neckcloth. Even his light brown hair hung loose around his shoulders like a countryman's. Yet his poor excuse for a dog wore a collar of gold and pearls, or so he said. She'd inspect it later, for she knew gold and pearls. She'd once possessed some, and would still, except for her brother, Cesare. God send him what he deserved. This Bonchurch was handsome, she'd grant him that. No wonder he expected her to fall into his arms. Women probably did that all the time. He had almost magical eyes, blue, but not a common blue. A sapphire blue that only an unfair god would give to a man, especially with long lashes as trimming. His fine profile could almost be beautiful, but no one would call him feminine. His cheeks were lean, his jaw square. Even though he couldn't be much older than she, he had the self-assured arrogance of his sex and an almost palpable aura of the erotic. He was sinfulness incarnate, and spoiled, the type used to getting what he wanted. And he wanted her. He hadn't even tried to hide it. To her annoyance, that game had stirred a coil of pleasure. What young woman doesn't want to be desired by a devastating man? And it had been so long. She pulled her mind back from that pit. He didn't admire her. He didn't even know her, and he could hardly be overwhelmed by her charms in her nun's garb. He wanted a nun as a hunter might want a trophy to hang on the wall. And in this hunting game, the advantage would go to whoever broke this silence. Which language? She was more comfortable in English than French. Wise of you to travel simply, Mr. Bonchurch. Lady Sodworth flaunted her wealth and title. He turned to her. And was doubtless fleeced, left, right and centre. She travels without some man to arrange details for her. She has outriders, but no one with authority since somewhere in La Vanoise. She dismissed the man her husband appointed for calling her more or less a twit. A man of discernment. Where is the husband? He found some pressing reason to travel home by a different route. Sister Immaculata, you're a cynic. Mr. Bonchurch, 3 weeks with Lady Sodworth would turn St. Francis of Assisi into a cynic. He laughed. I'm surprised you lasted so long. So am I. But to begin with, Lady Sodworth had a lady's maid, and the children had a nursemaid.
The latter, I remember, fell ill in Amiens.
And the former abandoned us. We encountered another party interested in her services, and off she went. Wise woman. Anna had no means of escape until she developed a fever. I wonder if it's possible to fall ill on purpose. Quite probably. What happened to her? She was left in a convent. That sounds like a tranquil alternative. But Lady Sodworth gave only the most miserly donation for her care. And how is she to get home? She's only 16 and has never been out of Italy before. I don't know what will become of her. Petra had added a few of her own coins, but she knew it wasn't enough. She would send more if she was ever in a position to. Give me the name of the convent, and I'll provide for her. Why? She said, sharp with suspicion. So you'll pay the debt with your body. When she shrank away, he waved a hand, a smile tugging at his lips. Forgive me. I have an impish sense of humour. Why should I not provide for her? The price is likely less than I'd pay for buttons. She eyed his horn buttons. I mean my better ones. I don't think you're rich at all. I don't think you're a nun. At that challenge, Petra took her well-worn prayer book out of the leather pouch she wore on her rope belt and turned her eyes to the Latin. Take that, you wicked rake, and chew on it, she thought. She tried to concentrate on prayer, but was aware of him to an infuriating degree. On the edge of her vision, he still stroked his dog, and she began to imagine those long fingers stroking her. If I removed your headdress, would I find long hair? Petra didn't look up. No. Is that the truth? What difference if I answer yes or no? A point. Let's make this more interesting. Promise to always speak the truth. She frowned at him. Why? For amusement. I don't need amusement. I do. And we have 2, perhaps 3 days' travel ahead. I'm providing free transportation and protection, sister. You might give a little in return. He had a point, and Petra knew she needed to learn more about him. If I promise truth, you must do the same. I have nothing to hide. You think I do? Sister Immaculata, you are a box of secrets, and I intend to discover every one. Let's establish the rules. Let's not. He ignored her. We may ask anything of each other. We need not answer, but if we do, we will tell the truth. Why on earth should I indulge you in this? As I said, in payment. If you wanted payment, you should have said so before I joined you. She returned firmly to her prayer book. Seek guidance from heaven, sister, the taunting voice said. I'm sure God will see that I have right on my side. Petra had to fight not to return to the fray. She won, but only just. She knew her own weaknesses. Force would not break her, but gentle seduction, especially seasoned with humour and whimsical delights, might melt her before she recognised her danger. She tried again to concentrate on prayer, for she surely needed it, but the presence of the man beside her, his body occasionally brushing hers with the swaying of the coach, made it impossible. She began to sweat, and not just because of the oppressive weather. She tried to avoid all sight of him, but his long legs were always in front of her, his body in the corner of her eye. 2, maybe 3 days. She gave up, closed the book, and put it away, shifting slightly to face him. There are some matters to be discussed, she admitted. Where will you take me in England? Our agreement, sister. Truth for truth. She sighed, but said, If you insist on such folly. I agree. Well? I'll take you wherever you want to go. Scotland, she said promptly. His eyes twinkled. Is not in England. Irritating man. I know that. I was countering nonsense with nonsense. I won't be obliged to you, sir, so I will not take you out of your way. I will ask no payment that you are unwilling to make, sister. But let's say London.
That will suit me perfectly. Thank you.
London is your destination?
It will suit me, she repeated.
Where in London?
That need not concern you, sir.
Before he could protest, she asked, Where in London do you go? I'll merely pass through. It's moribund in summer.
But it's the greatest city in the world.
Which everyone flees in the warm weather. London's a crowded, dirty place at the best of times, sister. In summer, it's all stink and disease. Thus, anyone who can flees to countryside or seashore. Are you sure you want to go there? She was wondering, but had to say,
Yes.
You go north, then? To Huntingdonshire. But I'll linger long enough to see you settled.
Where?
He asked again. She supposed he couldn't simply leave her on a London street.
You may take me to a convent there.
Sister Immaculata, there are no convents.
We promised truth. I speak the truth. We're a Protestant country. But you have Catholics. I know you do. And they are no longer persecuted.
Not tortured and executed, certainly. But there are restrictions on them. For all I know, there are still laws forbidding religious houses, but for sure any Catholic lady who wishes to become a nun travels to the continent. Which makes me think, do you have any other clothing?
A spare habit, some changes of linen, a cloak?
Then we must purchase something. There may be a law against wearing a nun's habit in England, but of a certainty, wearing one will make you conspicuous. And even put you in danger of unpleasantness. Petra's head was spinning.
Unpleasantness?
Catholics are not loved, and sometimes mistreated.
That is barbarous.
Is it?
Less than 20 years ago, a Catholic claimant to the throne, supported by the Catholic King of France, invaded and tried to seize the crown. Memories of the Armada live on, when the most Catholic King of Spain attempted to seize our country and return it to the rule of Rome. Petra looked down in dismay at her grey habit. What she'd seen as protection might now be her peril. Her courage was shrinking by the moment. Religious persecution was notoriously cruel, and she was not the stuff of martyrs. Lady Sodworth said nothing of this. Perhaps she simply didn't think of it. She never thinks of anything but her appearance. But we had an agreement, she and I. I would assist her with the journey if she transported me to England and advised me there. And you trusted her. His skepticism stung, but she could hardly respond with the truth, that she'd been desperate. Her title. But when I asked her about aristocratic ways, she was evasive. I think she is not a lady at all. In some senses, you might be right. What's her husband's name? Petra thought about it. She only ever refers to my husband or dear Samuel. I see now it is all a lie. Perhaps not. He could be Sir Samuel Sodworth and she could be Lady Sodworth. A mere knight? He seemed amused. Most would hardly think it mere. He could be a baron or higher, but I don't recognize the title. And you would? She knew the answer before he said, yes. Could he provide the knowledge she needed? You are nobly born, sir. Right back to the conquest. Then why are you a plain mister, and she is Lady Sodworth? He settled more comfortably, apparently willing to inform. In many countries, the children of nobles are all titled. And that can continue through the generations, but that's not the way in England. For example, the younger sons and daughters of a duke have the courtesy title of lord or lady, but that's not inherited, so their children are plain misters and misses. That is your situation? He laughed. The grandson of a duke? No. But wealthy and nobly born? Yes. The point is that plain misses and misters can be rich and important in England, and ladies can be upstarts. Many a foreigner comes to grief by not knowing that. Petra nodded. Thank you. What else do you want to know? Alas, she couldn't ask about the person she'd travelled so far to find. She'd not let a stranger close to that. Tell me about the royal court. She said. It is the court of St. James, I know, centred on St. James's Palace in London. True. That is where the king lives. Not true. No. The palace is a rambling old warren which the king only uses for official functions. He lives at the Queen's House, that's its name, in a more rural setting. And the court? His courtiers? Live in their London houses when necessary and their country ones when they can, as now. In summer, even the king moves farther into the country, to Richmond Lodge. How far is that from London? About 10 miles. Not too far. She could walk that distance if a carriage would be too expensive. You seek someone who will be at court? He asked. Trapped, Petra said. Perhaps. Who? I can't tell you that. You could trust me. I've known you less than an hour, sir. Even so. Exactly so, she said. Stubbornness is not a virtue, nor is persistence. Isn't it? Sister Immaculata, if that is your real name, I predict that you'll encounter difficulties in England. You will need me. She met his eyes firmly. And I know that I will not. Her declaration was hollow, and he must have known it, but she could not allow him to take over her life. She understood his price for that. He shrugged with irritating confidence. So you seek a gentleman of the court? If you won't supply a name, I will. A title? When she didn't respond, he said, Why not? Lord, as it covers everyone except dukes. I assume he's not a duke. You are irritatingly flippant, sir. If you won't amuse, I must. Let's see. Lord Mystery, Lord Conundrum, Lord Puzzle, Lord Riddle. Riddle, he declared. You seek Lord Riddlesome. As you wish. Petra smiled despite herself. By chance, he had the first letter right. But unless Riddlesome is part of the king's household, sister dear, he won't be at Richmond Lodge. He'll be enjoying bucolic pleasures at his country estate, Riddlesome Hall. So where is that? She remained silent. North of London? That tricked her. No. Out of her, and she tightened her lips. You are a very irritating woman, he said. His silly little dog suddenly whined and came to her feet. He scooped her up. She irritates you too? He smiled at Petra. She says yes. She'd say yes to anything you said, she snapped. Then realized she'd been tricked into his nonsense. Just because you can win over a dog so easily doesn't mean you will win me. No. Long fingers playing in fur again, stroking the dog to besotted contentment. She forced her gaze up to his face. Not even with your beautiful blue eyes. He smiled. Are they beautiful? Why, oh, why had she said that? Grateful that growing darkness stole their power, she said, You know they are, sir, and you enjoy using them to devastating effect. Are you devastated? Not at all. Of course you're not lying in my lap being stroked. We were talking of Coquette, weren't we? Heat flared in her cheeks. It's wicked to say such things to a nun. It's wicked for a nun to respond. I didn't. He silently accused her of lying, and he was right. But then he said, I apologize. Unfair to play such games when you have no escape. I'll try to be good. So what is your native tongue? Petra felt tossed breathlessly from near drowning onto dry land. Italian. Then your linguistic abilities are impressive. Your French is good and your English almost perfect. Only almost. Alas, a slight accent, but lovely. She smiled, but then realized she was being stroked in another way. How did you learn so well? He asked. Petra searched the question for traps, but found none. I had an English nurse, then later an English governess. How do you speak such good French? I had a French nurse and governess. But my mother is French and spoke French to her children. Your mother was English? No. Your father? Petra hesitated, then said, Yes. He spoke English to you? No. Alas, he died when you were young? Petra knew then that she shouldn't have gone in this direction. He left.
I see. Your mother?
Died recently.
My condolences.
He seemed to mean it.
Is that why you became a nun?
I've been in the convent for some years now.
He hadn't expected that and didn't welcome it. She saw no hint of peevishness, however. By St. Peter, she was beginning to like him, and that was truly dangerous.
How old are you?
He asked, but then rain rattled sharply against her window. She turned and he exclaimed, "Plague, take it!" Lost in their competitive conversation, they'd missed the change in the weather. Dark, heavy clouds roiled toward them, and sudden lightning flared. Too soon afterward, a crackling roll of thunder shook the air. The carriage jerked as the horses reacted and then sped up. The little dog yelped and burrowed beneath Mr. Bonchurch's coat. Petra wished she could do the same. She hated lightning, and the storm was on her side of the carriage. Another spear of lightning lit the inside of the coach with unnatural white light, making her flinch away from the window up against him. Instead of protecting her, he thrust the trembling dog into her hands, then let down his window to call out to his rider racing along on that side. "Is there any shelter nearby, Poeck?"
"Not in sight, sir,"
the man yelled back, hunched against the slashing rain, his horse wild-eyed. Petra covered the quivering bundle of bones and fur in the skirt of her habit, murmuring reassurances she wished she could believe.
"Any idea how far we've travelled?"
Bonchurch was asking.
"Perhaps 5 miles, sir."
He closed the window and swept wet hair off his face, but spared a moment to glance down and smile. Petra realized her bare legs were exposed up to the knee.
"Well?"
she asked sharply.
"Exceedingly well."
But then he returned to business. "Too far to go back. Too far from the next town." He dug a slim book out of his coat pocket and opened it to consult a road map and guide. He was a reprehensible rake, but there was nothing indolent or idle about him now. Given the situation, Petra was glad of it. But dog or not, she'd been right to think him dangerous. He wouldn't be easy to handle or easy to get rid of. Wanting to cover her legs again, she pulled her St. Veronica cloth off her belt and bundled the dog in that, holding it close to murmur, "Out of the pan but into the fire, Coquette. Both you and me. But I won't let you burn."